Well, welcome to the Cattle Call. This is your host, Curtis Oldie. Today we kick off the 2023 Charlet Junior Nationals in St. Paul, Minnesota. And this is going to be a two-part episode. And to kick off this first episode of the Cattle Call, we are going to interview the show dedicatee, Harlan Heck, with Double H Charlet. So, Harlan, thanks for taking the time to record us while we got the show going on. You got a bread known getting ready, so we're going to try to get this recorded and then get back to watching the show. But thanks for taking the time to sit down and talk with me. Maybe introduce yourself for the listeners and your family as well.
Okay, thanks, Curtis. Our family is my wife, Sue, and then I have three sons, Howard, Mark, and Dale, and each of them have three kids. So we have nine grandchildren. Six of them are actually showing here today. The other family, though, lives out in Massachusetts, so they're not available right now.
Yeah.
You had asked me earlier how I got started in Charlet. And my dad had some dairy cows, and we were milking them. And then he was switching over to beef, and he had mostly Angus cows. All at once, he went to an auction and went out and bought three or four three-quarter and seven-eighths Charlet cows. And that's I saw how fast the calves on those grew compared to the Angus. I just thought the Charlet got to be the future of the beef industry. And I think we're really getting that culmination right now.
Yeah. So about what time anyway would have you got those, or your dad would have got those Charlet cows?
Oh, I was still in high school, so it would have been in about 1960.
Okay. Because like I said, I think a lot of people, maybe younger individuals, look at when we talk about the Continental Invasion coming in there in the late 60s, Charlet coming over there, but they actually came over, I believe it was in 37,
yep.
From the King Ranch through the Michaelis, and I kind of talked about that with Maurice Ward when we had him on the podcast, but at that time we started seeing that influence coming in, so there's a lot of percentage cattle coming up at that time, as well as I think most of those would have been French cattle through Mexico. So.
Right. Well, then as time went on, I graduated from college, and a year later, Sue and I got married, and I was an ag teacher at the time. I taught vocational agriculture in Evansville, Minnesota for 3 years. So we were living in an apartment there in Evansville, and in about 6 months of that, I was kind of climbing the walls, you know, not used to being penned up that way. And we saw an ad in the Sunday paper that there was a dispersal sale on Charlet in southern Minnesota at the Zumbrota Sale Barn. So we went down there, and we picked out what we thought was the best cow in that sale. And she had a little bull calf at side, but he'd been born in the winter out in the corn stalks in late January, I think. And he had a little scours and that type of thing going with him. But anyhow, we were able to buy that cow and calf. So we didn't have a place to put them yet, so got my dad on the phone, and he comes with his truck and picks them up and takes them to his place for the rest of the winter. Then the next spring, we were able to rent a small farm with some pasture, and we bought three more cows. So we had a total of four head at the beginning, and that was kind of the beginning of our herd. Now, the cow that we bought, her name was D.E. Laura. And if you go to the AICA office, you'll see the heads of two cows hanging on the wall there. One is Miss Lynn 33, who was the first cow ever registered with AICA. The other one is our Laura cow, Double H Laura, who was the first calf that we actually bred and raised. She was out of that DE Laura cow that we had bought on that sale. And when she was 7 years old, she was named the first Sterling Dam of Distinction in the United States. So,
quite an accomplishment there.
Very fortunate to start out with that kind of quality.
Yeah. No, and taking a step back, one of the things I thought I'd mention, and you may not have known about me, was I came from the dairy side as well. Didn't like being in that milking parlor.
Yeah.
My dad didn't want to let the dairy go, but what I did was we were using Hereford and Angus bulls on some of those dairy heifers.
Uh-huh.
Bought all those heifers from my dad, and when they got to be about 2 or 3 years old, anyway, I was running my own kind of beef herd, but I had the opportunity to did some trucking for a bull, and it was one of Lester Lowell's bulls that an individual was leasing, but I hauled a bull back from the beef expo, and the individual I hauled it for said, hey, I got a bull that I'll let you borrow and put them on those cows, and I bet I put 100 pounds on those calves.
That's right.
Those fall calves. So that was, I wasn't technically sold yet, but I saw that when it comes to Charolais, they definitely can put some pounds on those calves. So
I didn't mention when we first bought that cow, I guess, but it was in February 6th of 1968.
Okay.
Was the actual date that I could say we got started in the business.
So was she been a full-blood cow or a percentage cow?
She was a 7/8.
Okay.
Yep. And so the first Sterling Dam was a 15/16.
Okay. Yeah, yep. And like I said, for those that don't realize, the Charolais had a breeder program because, like I said, there was limited genetics then. And I know some of the first cows I bought were higher percentage females that could turn around and make 31, 32nd purebred animals.
That's right. That's it. And that... that cow, by the way, produced another cow who was a Sterling Dam. So that cow family did carry on through.
Yeah, pretty consistent and
yeah,
strong family lines there. So what? How'd that transition into where you guys are today? And how did you guys build upon those first four cows to, I think Dale had, or not Dale, Mark had mentioned yesterday that maybe you guys had got up to maybe 50 or 70 cows at one time.
About 60 was our top, yeah.
So how did things kind of progress, and how did you guys market those cattle? Because it's a lot different than, some still do it the same for smaller breeders, but we did a lot more show, it seemed like, back then, and there was a lot more travel and so forth. But maybe kind of take us down that memory lane of how you marketed cattle back then and the connections you made.
Okay. Back then, like you said, you had to travel and get them out to people in order to get them to see them. And so we were mainly selling bulls at the time and keeping most of the females, just selling a female here and there for 4-H kids and stuff. But... as far as the bulls go, we were hauling them around everywhere. He'd take a couple to the Minnesota State Sale, and that was at New Ulm, Minnesota at that time. Then we'd take some out to the Sioux Empire Show in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Once in a while, we'd go out to Rapid City.
Okay.
We'd go to the Iowa Beef Expo. And we get into some sales in North Dakota. So all our bulls practically, other than a couple private treaty here and there, were marketed through those sales.
Okay.
And we have since, developed our own bull sales. In fact, now we're in with three other breeders, and we sell them at Northern Genetics up in Clear Lake, Minnesota.
Okay.
And combined sale in order to cut expenses down.
Yeah. Anymore, it seems like you got to have enough numbers to justify putting on a live sale to do that.
That is exactly right.
You did some traveling up in Canada too, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Quite a bit of travel up in Canada.
And maybe you can tell us about some stories, because I heard the Canadians like to have fun.
They do. We were in Winnipeg one winter, and a guy I knew up there had Charolais cattle. He bought some from me. But he had a mold for a fiberglass bull, and he had that bull on display in the hotel. And I really wanted that bull, and I talked to him because he was making them and selling them. In fact, the bull we wound up has a tattoo number 13 in his ear. It means he's the 13th one he made. Well, we got to talking to him and asked him what he wanted for it. Well, he said, "I see you got brought a couple fitting chutes up here that they're hard to find here in Canada." Oh, I said, "Yeah." He says, "If you would give me those two fitting chutes and $100, I'll sell you the bull." So we made the deal. But he said, "I'm going home. I'll just leave him in the lobby of the hotel where he is now, and you pick him up tomorrow morning." I got up the next morning, and the bull was gone. I asked at the front desk, "What happened to my bull?" "Oh, a few of your buddies got drunk last night, and they carried him up. He's on the sixth floor. And we went up there, and there was broken chandeliers going up the steps and all that. And we took the bull and tried to put him in the elevator. He didn't fit. We tried the freight elevator. He didn't fit. So four of us carried him all the way down those six floors."
Yeah.
Took him and put him in the trailer on the way home. All we had was one heifer at the time in the trailer. And we got to the vet's office at the border, and they said, "What do you got?" And I says, "Well, I got one live one, one dead one." Well, he didn't even crack a smile at that.
Not much of a sense of humor, did they?
Not at the Canadian border. You better be straight on. So we've been to Canada a lot over the years, sold a lot of cattle until the mad cow disease thing hit us. That really shut it down.
What did your boys think of that bull when you brought him home and unloaded him?
Well, Mark probably told you about this. But we took him home, unloaded him. We had a little white fence out in front of the house, and I put a halter on him and tied him to that fence. And they got up, and they were young at that time. I would say they were 8 and 12, somewhere in that area. And they said, "Did you buy something?" "Yep, I bought a bull." "Well, where is he?" "Oh, he's out there tied to the fence, but I got to warn you, his semen isn't any good." And they got on top of the washer and dryer and looked at him, and they were happy to see him. So now he stands out in front of our place, kind of welcoming people as they come.
And it sounds like a few of the local boys maybe come over and visit him as well.
Yes. Halloween is tough on him.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've had to repaint his testicles once in a while because they wound up blue after Halloween.
Yeah. Now, that tends to happen with those high school boys, so you never know what they're going to do.
I finally had one guy admit that he had done it one year, but he didn't admit it for 15 years after it happened. So.
Yeah. Well, one of the other things we're going to look at is, part of you turning chapters here, you're getting ready for a dispersal. So how many years have you been in the Charolais business?
And 55.
So 55 years you've been raising Charolais.
Yep.
And this fall you guys are looking at having a...
Yeah,
dispersal.
October 3rd, we'll have a dispersal on SC online sales. Wes Chisholm from JWC Management is managing the sale. And we're getting things put together now so that we're going to get still pictures and moving pictures of every animal. Now, we've been cutting down in numbers over the years, and so we're only going to have 38 animals to sell in that sale, and that's why we didn't want to go through the cost of on-the-place sale.
Yep.
Because we can do this cheaper. But we're also, like I said, the sale's October 3rd, but on September 30th, we're going to kind of have an open house where people that want to see the cattle can come and about 4 days before the sale and get a look at them in person. They'll be penned up where they can see them. And the kids said, well, we got to have a retirement party. So that evening we'll be serving meals and everybody's invited.
All right. So if anybody is in the area or wants to come up and check out the cattle, I had the opportunity to look yesterday, and it's a great set of females that you have put together to build your brand around. So be sure to come up for that. I'm sure there'll be more information coming up. And
yep.
I forgot to ask, do you guys have a website?
We do.
So I'll make sure to put in the show notes for this podcast or episode that a link to that. So any information on that, they can be sure to look up. And then at the time, I may do some forwards with Facebook and so forth.
Great.
So one of the things I remember you as is it seemed like you always kind of gravitated towards high-quality donors, if that sounds good. And you've accumulated some donors. So maybe in building your program, and maybe we could call this part of your Mount Rushmore of dams that you've kind of built your program around. And maybe could you talk about some of those females that you've used as cornerstones to build the program?
Yeah, I've owned several that I really felt were top females. You know, as I'd go around the country and I'd see a top one, I'd try and buy her if I could. And I was lucky enough to buy a cow named Miss E.C. Duke 248. A lot of people just know her as a 248 cow. And we've got offspring of her yet. We had the Marion cow family. I had the Marion cow, which is kind of a light tan colored cow.
Yeah. Was that the original D.A. Marion?
D.A. Miss Marion.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. And she produced extremely well for us. And then we actually raised a cow out of her that sold as a calf in one of our sales. And she went to a fellow in Missouri. I can't think of his name. But anyhow, I got a call then from Southern Cattle Company. They says, what is the deal on that Marion cow? And now this one was a pure white daughter of hers, but with a fantastic udder. And he says, we've been watching that cow and we're going to try and buy her. Well, I think they paid $10,000 for her then. We didn't get near that much when she was a calf. But she went on to be one of the major donors then for Southern Cattle Company. Then they had a dispersal, and I was a sale consultant for John Downs down there in Florida, and I was able to buy her back that day. And she spent several years as a donor for us.
Yeah, and I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you got three direct daughters of the Marion cow in the sale?
Yeah. Yep. So that family has been very good for us as well. Trying to think of what the other ones were.
Do you have I didn't bring my handout you gave yesterday, but was there a Jenny cow that is this dam of your herd bull that you...
No, she's not the dam of the herd bull, but I'll tell you about her first. She came out of Canada. I saw her up there, and I'd never paid so much money for a cow in my life, but I had to have her, so I was able to buy half interest in her and possession. We sold enough embryos in the first year and a half to more than pay for her. Did very well in that, but I didn't get many progeny to keep at home. And then the bugger died on us after that. We still got three embryos in the sale out of her and the club calf Monopoly bull.
Okay.
So that's still going.
Is one of her composite daughters in the sale as well, or is that
yes?
There's several composite daughters in that sale.
There is
one of them being a Monopoly.
That is correct.
And I think Mark had mentioned that you guys have marked some decent priced show steers out of that female.
That's right. That's right. Let me see. Oh, then we were fortunate twice in the sale of excellence to be able to partner and buy pick of the Debrucker herd. That is quite a deal to do that, because we were out there the first time. It was spent 3 days going through that herd, because there were, I think, 2,300 head of cows. And the way I did that is I just wrote to Brett Debrucker and told him to send me all the data on his herd. I said, I only want a polled cow, first of all. That'll cut it back some. But then he sent me the data on all his polled cows. I went through that and picked out 30 cows that I would consider. Then we went out there to look at those cows, and we go out in a pasture, and he'd say, okay, there's 200 cows in this pasture. Two of them are here. We got to find them. So, like I said, we spent 3 days. By the third day, they kind of all looked the same.
Yeah.
But we were able to get, I got a tremendous cigar daughter the first time, and then the next time, I got a cow that has really done a job for us, and there's lots of progeny of her in the sale, and we've got a young bull out of her that has done very well. I think it was 2 years ago in Denver, he was the National Reserve Junior Champion bull, and we sold half interest in him to some people that use him mostly as a club calf producer, but he's been running at their place. I kept the pasture rights on him for a 2-month period each year. So right now he's in our pasture.
And some of the females in the sale this fall will carry his service?
Several. Quite a few.
And you may have, I think you got some calves out of him too.
We have some tremendous calves out of him. There's a heifer here out of that bull that we showed her 5 times in the junior shows last year as a calf. She was grand champion all 5 in the composite area. This year we've only shown her 2 so far, but she's been grand once and reserve once. And she's going to show here today. So we're excited about seeing how she can get along in a national junior show.
Yeah, it'll be... And is that one of the ones that you're going to be watching here in probably about 15 minutes?
That's correct.
So anything else you'd want to share with any of our listeners about Double H or...
Well, we've been quite active in the breed. Our whole family has. And two of our sons, Howard and Mark, have been national junior presidents. Dale was herdsman of the year. Now their kids are out and going at it. So 6 of them are going to show here at the Junior National.
Okay.
Now.
Nope, that is a great tradition to keep going. So
yeah.
Hopefully we'll keep seeing some of those Double H genetics going through. Something I forgot to ask you about. What part of Minnesota are you guys from?
We're about 90 miles west of the Twin Cities.
Okay.
So if people are flying in, they can just fly into Minneapolis, probably the best thing to tell them. But we could certainly meet people at the airport and get them out to our place if they want to come. You're certainly welcome.
All right. Well, Harlan, I want to thank you for taking the time to sit down, kind of tell us about... the history of Double H, and again, congratulations on being the show dedicatee for the 2023 Charlie Junior Nationals here in St. Paul, Minnesota. And good luck with this fall with the sale. If anybody has any questions, look at the show notes. I'll have links to that. But with that, I want to, again, thank you for your time, and
okay.
Good luck today at the shows.
I would say we're very honored to have that honor. Quite a few years ago, we were the honorees for the conference. So now we've also happened to get the show honoree this year.
So you completed the circle.
We've completed the circuit.
All All right. Well, again, thank you for taking the time, and good luck on the sale here, or the show here in a little bit, and the sale later on this fall.
Well, thanks, Curtis.
All right. Thank you.